Hello, friends. Welcome to episode 80 of the Alabama Liberal Podcast. Today, we're going to be talking about what is the future of the Republican Party. Now, those listening to that title might think, who gives a shit, Alabama Liberal? Like, who cares what their future is? I hope they fly off a cliff. I hope they disintegrate and implode. And of course, those are my sentiments as well. I think we would probably be better off if there was no opposition to the Democrats and they can just do what they wanted to do. But of course, that's tyranny and that's a one-party system. But hopefully there would be no second party that was the Republicans, maybe the center-left and the far-left like some countries have. But either way, they're the party we're stuck with for now. And so people are prognosticating, are they going to implode? Is Trump going to split the party in half and form the Patriot Party, which is what he's threatened to do? Are they going to move on from Trump? They're going to turn on him, which is what I think. What's going to happen with that? And so it is an interesting question. There was a couple of things that I brought up last episode, and I didn't go deep into them. I sort of brought them up, but there was so much to talk about and cram into it. And you could say the same about this episode. I got to talk about the inauguration and I got to talk about some other stuff. So there's a lot this episode. But just to go back to last week, I brought up the fact of, why does Trump even want to be president? Like, why is he hanging on to this so bad? He clearly lost by a mile. And I mentioned last week, could you imagine if it was even close? The idea that these Republicans are basically saying he was cheated, he was screwed, and it wasn't even close. I mean, it was really just a man who hates losing. We've seen that from him over and over. In 2012, he said the race against Mitt Romney was rigged, that Obama had actually lost. Iowa primary against Ted Cruz, he said that was rigged. You'd think Ted Cruz would remember that this same man said the Iowa caucus against him was rigged, the Wisconsin primary against him was rigged. But of course, this isn't really about Donald Trump. This is not about him. They're not really trying to save him. Cruz and Hawley and all them, they know they can't save Trump. Otherwise, they wouldn't be trying. If they thought there was a real chance they could pull this off, they would not have pushed it this far, because there's no way they want to see that bloated, dead corpse in their way as they try to accede the ranks of the party, as they try to push him out of the way like a beached whale and take over the party. They don't want him really around anymore, and they know that. And for Cruz, he knows that Trump said the Iowa caucus against him was rigged, the Wisconsin primary that he won was rigged. They know that Trump said the Emmys were rigged when he didn't win the Emmys several years in a row. The 2016 race, he said, was going to be rigged. There was no way he could win it. Then he won it, and then it was not rigged anymore. It was the wildest of technicalities. And then he bragged for 4 years. He said, I won that race, so I get to do whatever I want. The people have spoken. The people chose Hillary Clinton by 3 million votes, which you'd think that he would care about that. But of course, that was rigged. There was a bunch of illegal immigrants in California that voted. No evidence whatsoever. But that's how she really won those 3 million votes. He was able to squeak through. But to see him brag about that victory, that really kills me, though, because that's a little bit like you're in the Olympics. You get the silver. The gold medalist is disqualified for some unbelievable arcane procedure, and then the silver medal winners for 4 years. I won. I'm the best. I'm the baddest. It really sucks to see somebody brag about winning on a technicality. All these things he said were rigged. They weren't really rigged. And so now, of course, he's lost. 2020, the big one. He threatened to do that for the Republican primary, but won, so it didn't matter. He threatened to do that for the 2016 election, but won, so it didn't matter. Now he's actually lost, and he's raising hell about it. He really won, and he's calling these officials in Georgia, harassing them, doing these unbelievably insane things for months. And now, of course, Biden's taken office, and he looks and sees the coronavirus vaccine distribution plan, and there is no plan, because Trump squandered 75 days. The transition period was just 75 days of Trump figuring out how he could steal it and how he could stay in there. And meanwhile, the American people have kind of been abandoned, if you think about it that way. We're orphans, the American people, because we have not had a federal government, I would say, in at least a year. Some people would say all 4 years of the Trump presidency, we have not had a federal government. The State Department has not been properly staffed. Many secretaries, they don't even know what their job is, like Ben Carson. Many of them are openly hostile to the departments they serve, like Betsy DeVos and Rick Perry. It's really been like we haven't had a true federal government for 4 years. And some people say, well, Trump is doing this to appeal to the libertarians, the Grover Norquist fucking fanatics, which, by the way, are still in the Republican Party, which is why I'm not totally hopeful that they're going to change that much now that Trump's gone. He's doing it to appeal to the fanatics like Grover Norquist, that they want to see a very small, limited government. And yet, irony of ironies, it's just an Amash who voted to impeach Trump, and he switched from the Republicans to the Libertarians because he saw that he was acting like a tyrant. I don't think it was so much that as he likes people who were going to do whatever the fuck he tells them to do and say whatever he tells them to say. A very limited government, in a strange way, looks a lot like fascism. There's a president, and he says what everything's going to be, and here's the executive orders, and you better follow them, and you better do what is in his mind at that moment, in that dark, swirling storm cloud that is Trump's brain. You better do it. So a very limited government in that way looks a lot like China, which is a total dictatorship, and there's millions of people in the government, but they're all doing what one person says. And so that's another form of limited government, is fascism. If you really think about it, you'll see the connection. The question of, why did he even want to stay as president? Was it just a pure power trip? Was it that he just really can't stand losing that badly? Was it that he was delusional enough to think he actually won? What was this thing that a man who refused to have a second term agenda, who refused to take the job seriously, who didn't seem to even care that COVID was wiping out hundreds of thousands of people, why would he even want to stay in there for as long? And of course, the answer is all the above, all the reasons people could speculate, but also the fact that he didn't want to go to jail. That's really what it boils down to. The worst possible reason for someone to want to stay president, want to keep power, want to stay in a job, they're afraid they'll go to jail. This is every shady CEO. This is every Ponzi scheme hedge funder. This is every dictator in the world. They don't want to step down because then their successor can see what they've been doing all this time and they'll be like, this person's got to go to jail. There's no fucking way that we can have this menace out there. So that's the worst possible reason for anyone to want to stay in public office. And yet it seems to be the only motivating factor. Richard Burr should be in jail for insider trading. Kelly Loeffler and David Perdue should be in jail for insider trading. Lindsey Graham should be thrown out of office for election tampering. Ted Cruz and Josh Hawley, they should be thrown in jail for insurrection. Ron Johnson also committed insider trading. Rand Paul, I mean, these, you could run through about 10 Republican senators who have no business keeping their Senate seats. And luckily, Perdue and Loeffler were defeated, so I doubt we'll see a big call for investigations into them now that they're out of office. And people, of course, screaming at the podcast, but Trump's out of office. Trump is a menace to society. Biden, I believe, is not safe as long as Trump is neither in jail nor dead, because I don't believe he can be safe with Trump out there, because we know how Trump is. And I think it's a huge victory that Facebook and Twitter and some of these platforms have kicked him off and deplatformed him. But at the same time, I think somebody like Trump will find a way. He can still call into Fox News, and those bozos will probably put him on if he were to do that. Now, they may not do it as much as they were, because it was getting to the point where he would call in and they would let him ramble for 30 minutes straight. We can't even imagine, like, if Barack Obama had a direct line to MSNBC and was like, hey, Rachel Maddow, I'm going to hijack your show for an hour and talk about whatever the hell I want to for an hour. Republicans would be screaming bloody murder. Democrats, we had so much stuff to get to on Trump. We had so many things to go after him for. We didn't even get to the fact that he was using Fox News as his personal messaging service to a crazy, delusional base that Fox News built, and then he used it as a personal vehicle to spread propaganda and lies. When talking about the future of the Republican Party, do I think that Trump is going to go away? I think he could die. You know, he used to make fun of Biden for being really old and out of it and everything. Trump's only 3 years younger than Biden is. And if you watch that first debate, he's clearly in worse health. If you watch a lot of what he does, he's clearly in worse health. But idiots like Joe Rogan are like, I like Trump because he's got testosterone. He looks like a 30-year-old. He's out there. And I thought, you're so full of shit, you know, and he's probably only saying that just so he can get interview with Trump, which his base will go nuts for or whatever. But they kept praising the machismo of Trump, the testosterone of Trump. He's just pure testosterone. Trump is a fat ass, clearly over 300 pounds, clearly probably close to 350 pounds, if I had to guess. He eats McDonald's every day. A man that age, at that weight, who eats McDonald's hamburgers and steak every day, there's no way he can live much longer. Talk about 2024, what's going to happen? 4 years is an eternity in politics, and a lot could happen. And the idea of, will the Republican Party turn on him? I think they will. I think they've already begun it. I know I said last week, I'll say it again because it really bears repeating. The media is thinking that they can keep the Trump cash cow going. They can keep his insanity going for four more years, not realizing that a huge part of the reason Trump got thumped in the biggest defeat since Hoover for Republican president, the reason he got thumped so badly is because people are ready to turn the channel. They're ready to turn the page. I can't tell you how many people I hear from, and they're not on Twitter, they're not political junkies, but moderate voters, like independent voters. Sometimes they vote, sometimes they don't. And a lot of these people, so many of them say, I can't watch him. He makes me sick. I hate watching him. I don't want to watch him. And you hear that so much. I don't think they realize that they can't keep this going, this insanity and this bullshit. And plus, there's a lot of successors waiting in the wings to do insanity. Rand Paul, Ted Cruz, Josh Hawley, Mitch McConnell. There's a lot of successors to Trump's brand of insanity. Many of them ran against him in 2016, and they're hoping to run again in 2024. And most of those players are still on the board. Very few of the 2016 people are totally out of the game. You have many people going to do it. I believe that the base will start to shift on him, turn on him. I gave the example last week of George W. Bush had those little W stickers everywhere on the cars in 2008. There was people in that cult of Bush in 2008, late into the presidency, people ready to die for him. And at the same time, the majority of the country was ready to turn the page, as they clearly have on Trump. But then after Bush left office, that Republican Party and that conservative base, that evangelical base that was so fanatical for Bush, because keep in mind, at the time Bush was in office, he was very conservative. It doesn't look that way now because the Republican Party is been driven off a cliff, but he was a very conservative president. He was much more conservative than Bob Dole and his father, George H.W. Bush, and some of the candidates they'd been running before him. But because he had that fanatical devotion amongst that base, and yet Bush leaves office, about 6 months later, it's Bush who? These people that have the W stickers or whatever. Then they replaced them with the Tea Party bumpers. So the Tea Party totally seceded the energy that Bush brought into the party. And then, of course, Trump, and the rest is history. But I think Trump's out of office, and Republicans have always been very good about not keeping someone like Hoover alive, Nixon alive, Bush alive. Once a president is pretty much disgraced and been defeated, and Trump was defeated soundly. They can pretend all they want to that it was stolen from him, but there has never been a coherent narrative that that's true. And it doesn't help that Giuliani changed his story about 15 times to, well, it was Dominion, which is a Canadian company, and it was actually a Venezuelan investor of Dominion. No, it was actually Mexico that the ballots were smuggled over into. No, it was actually North Korea that did this. No, the votes were actually sent to Spain, and Spain changed all the votes, and then they sent them back here. When they interviewed Chris Krebs, Homeland Security and Cybersecurity and Elections Czar, that Trump fired, by the way, after saying the election was fair and not rigged and totally on the board. They interviewed him on 60 Minutes and talked about the votes going to Spain and coming back. And he just was like, ugh. Like, he just rolled his eyes, sighed really quick, and then moved into it. It was very clear that this is demented old men pulling shit out of their ass because they don't want to leave office. Why do they not want to leave office? They don't want to go to jail. Trump's going to spend the rest of his miserable life going to New York courtrooms to answer for criminal charges there, federal courtrooms to answer for charges there. He's going to spend the rest of his life on trial or having to account for massive debts. Another reason to stay in office. Something like $500 million in debt is going to come due in the next 2 years. Well, as president, it's very hard for your creditors to be like, hey, let's go to the Oval Office, the guy with the nuclear launch codes. From the guy with the military around him, let's get our money back. As ex-president, it's quite a bit easier to do that. And of course, there's all these stories about his family living large on the taxpayer dime. Ivanka and Jared and his immediate family, his kids, they're going to have 24/7 protection from Secret Service. It's going to cost the taxpayers millions for a family to continue to have this outrageous security detail which Trump has put in place for them. Maybe some of that's because some of these clowns are going to run next to secede him, and that probably will happen. But you have his family trying to milk the system for as long as they could. One story that really made me mad was there were stories about Jared Kushner and Ivanka, their Secret Service detail when they were in the White House. They're working in the White House, but they live somewhere else. But they wouldn't let Secret Service use their bathroom. The Secret Service had to go somewhere else to use the bathroom. It's ridiculous. They're protecting your lives, but they can't go 10 feet into there and use your bathroom. Like, how snotty is that? So that really made me mad. And what people to piss off, by the way, the Secret Service that are protecting your lives. Yeah, let's make them mad and talk down to them and treat them like garbage. That makes a lot of sense. Then you have stories about on Inauguration Day, which I will get into that and talk about it because I think it was so positive and so awesome and so amazing. I literally was so filled with hope and teared up once or twice, don't mind to say. But on Inauguration Day, Trump fired the butler that he had hired, the chief White House usher. By the way, Melania pulls this dude from one of their hotels. So he's a Trump appointee all the way. He's somebody from their DC hotel that they put in the position of chief White House usher. Probably a lot of the wait staff were Trump people because he's so paranoid. He thinks somebody's going to poison his McDonald's or something. So he's so crazy that he thinks, like, probably a lot of these people were in the Trump orbit. They hire this man to be the chief White House usher, and they fire him about 4 hours before the Bidens get to the White House, just so the Bidens will be locked out of the White House and they can't get in, and there's nobody to help them with their luggage. Triumphant moment of return to the White House falls flat, or so they think. I don't think anybody even noticed it or really cared what was going on. But they sent the entire White House waitstaff home early for the day, sent them home so that nobody was there to help the Bidens when they arrived, and they fired the chief White House usher, which is one of their people from their hotels. Now, I emphasize this because if that doesn't prove they don't care about you ever, I don't know what does. Let's get a guy from one of our hotels to be the chief White House usher. And then, just so Biden doesn't have anybody to help him with their luggage when they enter the White House, let's fire him 4 hours before the Bidens arrive, just so they're out there like, womp womp, for a 15-minute act of petty, stupid, I don't know if you'd call it revenge, but just being a dick, just trolling the Bidens for 15 minutes. They're willing to throw away this man's livelihood as chief White House usher, one of their own people. Lindsey Graham and Ted Cruz and all these dumbasses, I think they would be absolutely stupid to think the Trumps care about them or they give a damn about them. This is a man who's screwed over everybody who's ever had the misfortune of getting close enough to him. Been sued 1,200 times in civil court. Charity dissolved for fraud. University dissolved for fraud. His personal attorney, Michael Cohen, doing an errand for Trump, went to jail on his behalf, doing something for him, and Trump didn't pardon him. He pardoned Roger Stone and Steve Bannon, not necessarily because he cares about them as people, but because they're anarchists, they're mischief makers. Roger Stone and Steve Bannon can create a lot of trouble if they're out there in the wind. It's like pardoning the Joker and the Penguin, and Michael Cohen sitting there like an ordinary citizen. No, fuck you. You can rot in jail. He pardoned people that he thought could be useful to him in some kind of way, or people, perhaps in the case of Stone, that knew a lot about him personally, that could have tied him more directly to some of these crimes. Who knows, right? People are kind of outraged about all these pardons, and they should be, but at the same time, it was a lot of personal favors, but it was a lot of people he thought might could be useful to him down the road, perhaps, and that's all he cares about. There is no sense of loyalty this man has to his wives, to his attorney, to his business partners. That's never, ever, ever been the case. Feel like even his kids to an extent. Tiffany Trump, it's almost like, who's that? Barron Trump, they keep him locked up in the basement because he's got Asperger's and Trump's old man sperm. They don't want it out there that caused that. And by the way, that is a leading thing, they think, that the age of the father may be too old, or that it could be like these men over 50 or 60 having kids. They do think that could be a contributing factor to the meteoric rise. They're not really sure, but that's one very plausible reason, is that Superman Trump, Hero Trump, his sperm was too old. You know, you have basically a guy that has no loyalty to anything or anyone, and his base is slowly figuring that out. I gave that prediction only about a week ago that his base would begin to turn on him. There would be whispers of Trump who, or, and I guarantee you this will happen, folks. I know I've said it, but I'll say it again because I really want people to give me credit when this happens. 6 months down the road, well, you know, Trump was never a real Republican. He was never really one of us. He wasn't a conservative. He was a New York liberal. He didn't really care about abortion that much, and he didn't really care about gun rights. And so you're going to see that. I guarantee you'll see that, despite the fact that all these people are ready to die for him now, because that Q shaman, the guy that was the Q shaman, you see him in he's shirtless, but he's getting on like a buffalo helmet or some bullshit like that. That guy's been like, I wish I hadn't let Trump use me. He's already saying, Trump used me, and I feel used. And a lot of the Proud Boys are basically being like, Trump was so weak to let Biden take office, and he didn't pardon a lot of us, even though we showed up for him. And now there's stories that the Trump campaign or someone in it gave $2.7 million to the organizers of that riot, which that doesn't surprise me at all. That is not a surprise to me one bit. I figured he had organized it in some way, and I figured he'd paid for it in some way. And now those people are like, well, we showed up mostly because Trump was paying us because we're fucking flat broke in his economy because we've lost all of our jobs and from COVID and all these crazy shit that he was doing wrong, and there's been a huge recession, finding out that the jobs numbers were fudged. The unemployment numbers were a lot worse and had been for a while, and his department had been fudging that. So I think the economy they're going to figure out is a lot worse than they've thought it has been. COVID is a lot worse than they thought it has been. I know the deaths have been underreported. I've given the example before that my mother's had 3 or 4 of her friends die in 2020, and because they had pre-existing conditions and because they were over 70, I don't even think they did COVID tests for them. I'm sure 1 or 2 of them died from COVID. They didn't test it, and they didn't really even figure it out. And so I think the number's higher than what they've said it has been. And Trump has been deliberately telling states, don't worry, we'll handle it on our end. The federal government's got it, trying to keep the numbers artificially low. irony of ironies, this is exactly what he accused China of doing. He accused China of keeping the numbers artificially low. He did the same damn thing. The COVID crisis is worse than people thought it has been. The economy is worse than people thought it has been. Trump's willing to pay the Proud Boys and these dumbass groups to show up and cause hell at the Capitol, but then he didn't pardon them. And once he's done with you, he's done with you. He throws you to the side. So now his own base is beginning to be like, Trump's weak. We can do our own shit. We can find somebody else. We can find a new front man. And that leads me to perhaps the future of the Republican Party. If Trump's out of the way, as I believe he will be, who inherits the Republican Party? What's the future of them? Where are they going? Well, let's take a look at their immediate past. If you go back to Eisenhower, who is probably the only decent Republican president in about the last 100 years. From Teddy Roosevelt to today, I think Eisenhower is the only good Republican president, but he's a rhino. There's no way, even at the time, Eisenhower was considered a rhino. You had the Koch brothers, their dad, Fred Koch, industrialist at the time, he thought Eisenhower was a communist. So there was a radical right wing, even at that time. Former President Taft, who Teddy Roosevelt hated so much he created the Bull Moose Party to run against him, Taft's son, Senator Taft from Ohio, led the conservative wing of the Republican Party, and I put him down as one of the biggest assholes in American history. On AlabamaLiberal.com, one of my biggest articles I've ever had is I did a countdown of the 10 or 20 biggest assholes in American history, and Robert Taft, the senator from Ohio, was one of them because he was leading what at that time would have been the Koch brothers, would have been the Tea Party, would have been the conservative wing of the Republican Party at a time when it could have branched off into a different direction. You had the Eisenhowers, you had the Gerald Fords, you had the Rockefellers, you had a moderate wing of the Republican Party that people like Taft were desperate to squelch. If you really look at that period between the 30s and the late 60s, the parties generally kind of agreed on some really big stuff, and they generally were sort of on the same boat, but the American people prospered enormously from that. That's the time period that the baby boomer sort of grew up in, and that's why they have so much more money than millennials do. It was before Reagan hijacks the party, makes it ultra conservative, and then Bush built on that, and then Trump built on that. And now people like millennials and Gen Z, we have less money than ever. So this has been a disaster for the middle class. It's really about promoting a social agenda. They don't even believe in it, but it's a vehicle to get to the deregulation, the tax cuts, the corporate monopolies. It's a vehicle to get to the point to where the income inequality is sky high, which is all they've ever really cared about. And that has been a disaster for the middle class. That has hurt us in ways. I don't know if people, there should have been scandals about how little money millennials have compared to baby boomers. The starting salary for millennials, adjusted for inflation, is worse than it was for baby boomers. And Republicans are bitching and whining about, oh, well, $15 an hour minimum wage. That's $15 an hour times 40 hours a week is $600. Now, I don't know about you, but I don't know who could live on $600 a week, pre-taxes and all the other stuff. I mean, $600 a week, plus most of those jobs don't have health insurance or any kind of benefits. You're talking about less than 30 grand a year before taxes with no benefits, no health insurance. I don't even know who could live on that. And they say, well, the minimum wage is not meant to live on. Well, try telling that to some of these companies. Because there's people that are working there, they're not teenagers. The old lie used to be, well, it's teenagers. And by the way, why shouldn't teenagers be properly compensated? I had money as a teenager from working these awful, awful jobs. Food World, a lot of what they did to me was abuse. I mean, I look at people like Paris Hilton crying about abuse. Oh, I went to a reform school in Utah and they yelled at me. It's a reform school. You're there because you broke the law. It's not supposed to be a fucking day spa. You're at a boot camp and people yelled at you and you call that physical and psychological abuse. I'm more interested personally in the private schools that she went to in LA, the rich private schools like Viewpoint and Campbell Hall and Buckley. I'm more interested in what abuse the poor and minority kids suffered at those schools. But of course, we don't hear from them. We're supposed to feel sorry for Paris Hilton because she had a 2-week stint in a Utah reform school and it was kind of rough on her. You know what? It was supposed to keep you out of jail, which you went to jail in Los Angeles and you cried to the sheriff and he let you out after a few days, which wasn't supposed to happen, but did happen. It's unbelievable, the idea of what people consider abuse, but at Food World and Walmart and some of these jobs I took as a teenager, I was abused. I have damage in my eye from throwing out hot grease that they never properly sealed to the dumpster. Some of the hot grease got in my eye. I was electrocuted once in the parking lot. I fell on a box cutter, and none of these things I was properly compensated for. Screamed at, yelled at, told I was shit by one of the managers. One of the managers said he was going to beat me up, and this guy was a fucking dwarf, too. He was about 5 foot tall. I said, you do, and I'll whoop your ass. Because I could have, too. I could have hammered this guy on the ground like a railroad spike. But I'm saying that's the mentality of a lot of these minimum wage jobs in the Southeast. It's like almost abusive. It's almost like you're working in the Trump White House for some little Napoleon ass. He's a tall man, but he's got a Napoleon complex. But a lot of the managers I had growing up, they're short men, insignificant men, nobody men. And they thought it was cool, I guess, to scream at teenagers, we need that job, or we think we do. We don't really. We could quit tomorrow and go get hired somewhere else. But I think the minimum wage job cycle, it's a cycle of abuse, psychological plantation. The Republicans are arguing, oh, $15 an hour, that's too high. That's too low. Who in their world could live on less than 25 grand a year or whatever it would be, minus taxes and benefits? Not to mention if you have any health problems, McDonald's is going to fire you. They're under no obligation to keep on people that are expensive healthcare-wise or have health problems. It's one more example of Republicans are completely out of touch. Tommy Tuberville, unfortunately, the new senator from Alabama who replaced Doug Jones, which still sticks in my craw. But this man is saying, oh, well, the unemployment benefits, they're too high. This man got paid millions of dollars to leave Auburn University early. They bought out his contract and said, we don't want you around anymore. And by the way, Cam Newton owes his career to that happening, by the way, because I don't think somebody like Tuberville would have ever wooed Cam Newton over, would have started him as a quarterback. Tuberville's a bigot. Tuberville's pushed out. His contract's bought out for millions of dollars. But yet, unemployed workers, $600 a week. Oh, that's too high. That's crazy. Or what? I mean, give me a fucking break, dude. Like, the irony police should show up and arrest you on the spot. He's pushed out, and then Cam Newton's brought in. Then Auburn wins their first national championship in forever, mostly off the strength of Cam Newton as this awesome quarterback. I don't think that would have happened if Tuberville had stayed there, just me personally. Getting off on sports for just a second, I saw that Alabama won another national championship, but when they showed Tuscaloosa, there was a sea of people. I mean, a mob of people. I mean, it was thousands. Nobody was wearing a face mask. And even if they were, at that point, you're so ass to elbows, I don't know if a face mask is helpful if you've got 100 people on top of you. I mean, you're all breathing the same air. You're screaming, Roll Tide, yeah, that number one national championship. But I looked at that mob in Alabama, and I just thought, you know, some of these people, COVID has killed a lot of people who don't deserve it, and they got it somehow, and it just, but I mean, some of these people are taking absolutely no precautions, and I think some of that's Trump's doing. I think some of that's the fact that he refused to take the virus seriously. A lot of them don't seem to realize they can get it. They feel like Superman, or they think even if they get it, it won't hurt them that bad. They're invincible. One of the scariest things to me is not just the people dying from COVID, but the lingering health side effects. And there are lingering health side effects. They had a story on 60 Minutes. This was a couple months ago, but it talked about like a female doctor had gotten COVID, and she's relatively good health. She's younger lady, and she goes, but my knees still hurt, and I still feel fatigue, and I'm going to have holes in my lungs for years and years. We just tell people not to smoke, and you should never smoke. Cigarettes are the number one public health menace of the last century, but they create lung problems and lung cancer. COVID could potentially do the same thing even after you're better, even after you're cured from it. There could be lingering health problems. I think the millions and millions of people that have contracted the disease, but they've rebounded from it, we don't even know what it could really do long term, or if there's even a real way to get over it long term of the health problems that it could create. So you could have, I don't know, 5-10% of your entire population in a country like America, that's millions of people, that's huge, basically suffering adverse health side effects risk, or maybe dying 10 years younger than they would have, or whatever the case may be. It's a terrifying disease. People should try their best not to get it as much as possible, and get vaccinated if you haven't already. And there's shortages here in LA. Unfortunately, I haven't been able to, but I can guarantee you that mob in Tuscaloosa, most of those people have not had the vaccine. They are not inoculated. They are not wearing face masks. They do not care. And I have to wonder what the political breakdown is of people dying from COVID. There's been lots of people in California, liberal people, that have died from it. But I have to wonder if states, in some cases, that it's not mostly Trump people that are dying from this. If it's not a big chunk of his fanatical base. I wonder if that was enough to tip the scales in Georgia. Ossoff won by a very narrow margin. If only a couple thousand Trump voters or conservative voters or people that would have voted for Perdue, if they died between the November election and whenever they could cast their votes in January, and I'm sure that was the case, maybe that was enough to tip it in Ossoff's direction. Maybe that'll happen perhaps in several states. So in a way, you look at these problems that Republicans create, and you see COVID, and you see Trump, and you see all these things. We're almost doing their dirty work for them. We've always heard that COVID disproportionately targets black and brown communities. I think that is part of why Trumpers don't care about it that much. They think, well, it's mostly killing black and brown people. And that's what we've wanted to do from the very beginning. So maybe that's why they don't care that much. But I look at a mob at the Capitol. I mean, thousands of people pouring into the Capitol, almost nobody wearing a face mask. I guarantee you, if one of them people put on a face mask, they'd be like, what are you, Colin Kaepernick? Take that shit off. It's become a political statement. My parents go places in Alabama, and people look at them like they're trying to make a political statement by wearing this mask. That's how bad it is in some quarters. And yet, the Capitol mob not wearing a face mask, the Alabama Roll Tide mob not wearing a face mask, you have to wonder if it's not disproportionately impacting, at this point, the rural voters, the white voters, real honky-tonks, you know, like way out in the boonies. You have to wonder if it's not disproportionately affecting them at this point. And if it is, you'd think Republicans would take it seriously. You'd think that they would want to cure it as fast as they could, to distribute a vaccine as fast as they could. It's all falling on Biden. He's got to fix the economy. He's got to fix COVID. He's got to somehow heal the nation, bring us back together, bring the Republican Party back from the brink of just fucking Talibanism at this point. I mean, it's gone absolutely batshit nuts. And like I was saying a minute ago, leading back, circling back a little bit, you went from Eisenhower to Richard Nixon to Ronald Reagan to George Bush to Donald Trump. Now, at that rate, in 2024, they'll nominate an active militia member at that rate. If you look at that degeneration, I don't know where you go from there except Timothy McVeigh or somebody like that. I mean, Marjorie Taylor Greene, I suppose, with her AK-47 and her camo boots or whatever. I mean, I don't know how much crazier you can get, but there's two ways that you can look at that. You can look at that as like, that is a clear degeneration across the ages. Or you look at it as like, maybe this is where they finally, pull themselves back from the brink. And it's not really even the Republicans. It's the donors. The donor class has to become less batshit nuts. The Rupert Murdochs, who control the conservative media, they have to become less batshit nuts. And I think that that has to sort of happen in an extent. So Charles Koch has signaled that he regrets funding a lot of these ultra-conservatives. But who knows if he means that? Who knows if, even though he's 80 years old and a billionaire, one of the richest men in America, who knows if he looks at 2024 and says, well, I could go in a direction of Biden and Harris and my tax rates go up, or I could promote an active militia member that I don't pay any taxes. I'll promote the militia member. I've always been baffled at these people, like him and like a lot of the conservative donors, that if it's between paying 3% more in taxes or saving the country, saving really their customer base, they choose the 3% in taxes. It's astounding to me that an old man with billions of dollars who's at the end of his life, there's not a lot else you can do besides secure your legacy. Your legacy is all you really can live for at this point. No, let's go with saving 2% on my taxes. Like, who gives a shit? I mean, honestly, really, more money than you could ever spend. Is it really that important to save a little bit on taxes? Kevin O'Leary, one of the worst sharks on Shark Tank, if not the worst, he was on CNBC, and he was talking about, well, the Biden presidency, I feel that they're going to have to spend so much time on COVID and on the economy, they can't raise taxes. And I wondered if that wasn't some of what Republicans deliberately try to do, which is to leave Democrats with so much of a mess to clean up. We can't even focus on healthcare reform. We can't even focus on climate crisis. We can't even fix some of the big, enormous structural problems that we have to face in this country because we're so busy cleaning up their fucking messes. I wonder if that's not part of the problem, is to create a gigantic oil spill and then be like, well, I know you had problems, but you got to clean up that oil that we just spilt all over the country for you. You know, you got to fix that. I wonder if that's not part of the thinking behind it. And that's not why Democrats throughout the decades, Bill Clinton, Barack Obama, now Joe Biden, we have to spend the entirety of our first 2 years fixing their mess. And then because they funded a narrative, the midterms go and then they turn against us. So in the midterms, we'll probably lose the House, which I fucking despise that fact. I hate that. That's insane to me that the Democrats could lose any election. I think at this point, you'd have to be brain damaged to vote for Republicans. But we lose the House in 2022. Possibly the Senate, although I don't think so. We might gain a seat or two in the Senate. But then Biden doesn't have a Democratic Congress, so then it becomes all the stuff we wanted to do, Puerto Rico statehood, D.C. statehood, the Green New Deal. Oh, well, you didn't get to do that because you had to save the economy from total collapse and fix COVID your first 2 years. Sorry about that, guys. It really feels like that's a pattern. But I look at Kevin O'Leary, billions of dollars, and an old man. And you think, like, why is that so fucking important? Why is it like I got to get $3 million more dollars on top of $2 billion more? What is the point of this at a certain angle? In my personal life, we were, just to tell you the truth, we were looking at our expenses throughout the next few decades. And our biggest thing, you know, the kids' college fund, probably true for a lot of Americans. If we stay healthy, knock on wood, hopefully stay healthy. But you set aside some for emergencies and your kids and everything. And I thought, you know, we really need about $1.5 million, maybe $2 million. That's really like what we got to try to come up with for the next couple decades, which is going to be a real stretch. I mean, it's a real anxiety to think about having to come up with that much money. And yet you click on a Yahoo News story and Rihanna is wearing $2 million worth of dollars in jewelry, just out to eat. Just she's out and about eating her dinner or whatever, and she's wearing $2 million worth of jewelry. And it's almost like the amount of jewelry that somebody wears is what we need to either survive or stay solvent or hopefully have some semblance of a middle-class existence. And it's profoundly irritating to think this way and to have income inequality be as bad as it is, as horrible as it is at this moment in time, and then to have Republicans turn around and everything we're trying to do, socialism. Socialism. I want to fucking kill the next person that talks about socialism to me. Income inequality has not been this bad since the 1920s. It's not been this bad since before the Great Depression. And yet you want to do any little thing as a Democrat. Socialism. I'm like, there's never been a worse time to complain about socialism or complain about a $15 an hour minimum wage, which most people can't even live on that, and they're fighting that shit. What's the future of the Republican Party? Like, where do they go from here? Unfortunately, they have absorbed a lot of the worst lessons from Trump. They've absorbed this mentality, and I hear this on message boards all the time, that, well, we ran Reagan and we won huge, and we ran George W. Bush and we won. They can't say huge because he didn't win huge, but they won at least. They ran Trump and they won. But with the moderates, they keep losing. So George H.W. Bush in 1992, they lose. Bob Dole in 96, they lose. Mitt Romney, they lose. John McCain, they lose big in 2008. So they've absorbed the worst possible lessons from the last 30, 40 years, which is that with moderates from Gerald Ford onwards, they've lost almost every election. Now that is a bullshit, horrible narrative, and I hope the media, God, I hope they don't spread that, but that's actually completely misleading because when you look at why did Gerald Ford lose to Jimmy Carter? Because he pardoned Nixon. Because he had pardoned Nixon and he was never elected. So that's really an outlier. George H.W. Bush in 1992, he was partly defeated because Perot split his base and also because you'd had 12 years of Republicans at that point. The country felt ready for a change. So it wasn't because Bush was too moderate and couldn't inspire the conservative base or whatever like that. That's nonsense. Then with John McCain, the reason he got beat so badly, it wasn't even really him. It was George W. Bush. The ultra-conservatives that had been elected had failed so badly that they turned to Barack Obama. They thought, hey, let's take a flyer on a guy with a Muslim father, an African father, an interracially married parents. I mean, this guy that you would think would have been easy at the time would have been easy for the Republicans to beat. At the time, we were all wringing our hands like, oh my God, Obama's amazing, but can he win? Can he win this country over? Able to beat John McCain by a huge margin, but it was because Bush had crashed the economy. Barack Obama has even said, I wasn't really running against John McCain. I was running against, and he phrased it as, the mood at the time, the direction of the country at the time. He means Bush. He was running against Bush. And a lot of people I've seen have said that they were influenced not to vote for John McCain because he picked Sarah Palin. They were worried that John McCain would die of a heart attack. At the time, he was very old. And the job of president is very stressful. Barack Obama went into office looking like Will Smith. He came out looking like Danny Glover. He had white hair. Bill Clinton, same thing. George W. Bush, same thing. The job of president is extremely stressful. They believe that 8 years in the Oval Office is like 20 years for a regular person. So they say things like sitting is the new smoking. Maybe being president is the new smoking. Like it will age you. So people were concerned about this. If John McCain's elected as an old man, has a heart attack, Sarah Palin becomes president, he's partly defeated because of the right-wing running mate that he chose, and especially because of George W. Bush, the right-winger he was trying to succeed. Mitt Romney, you could sort of say the same thing about, where it's not because he's too moderate and he can inspire the conservative base. Barack Obama got elected. He did a fantastic job. He was a great president. I don't believe any Republican could have beat Barack Obama. If we could take a time machine back and see, oh, Mitt Romney, he was only beaten by 5 million votes. What would Rick Santorum have been beaten by? What would Mike Huckabee have been beaten by? It could have been a blowout. We have no idea. It could have been 10 million, 15 million votes. We have no idea because a lot of people wouldn't have wanted Rick Santorum and Mike Huckabee to be president. But they've absorbed it as the moderates lose and the ultra ones, like Trump in 2016, nobody could have won that race except for Trump. I believe nobody could have lost that race except for Trump. That's why I pushed Trump. So a lot of people have been like, well, you know, I'm a liberal. The first 25 episodes or so of the podcast, you were quite soft on Donald Trump. It was because I believed he could have been beat by Hillary. I didn't think John Kasich or Marco Rubio, I didn't think she could beat them. And I was very concerned. I wanted the weakest possible candidate up there. 2016, Barack Obama had been president for 8 years. Now, to find a case where the Democrats control the White House for 12 years consecutive, other than FDR and Truman, which was historically rare, FDR and Truman, Truman won, only president to ever win 4 terms, and Truman succeeded him when he died, and then he was reelected. So that was a very rare 20-year stretch that had never happened before. But to find a case before where Democrats controlled the White House for 12 years, you got to go back to Andrew Jackson and Van Buren to find a case where they had controlled it for that long. So I knew it would be very tough for Hillary, regardless of who she was up against. It was going to be really tough to win 12 years of the White House. I thought Trump was the only one that could be bad enough to do it or whatever. I just had no confidence that she could truly beat John Kasich or someone in that mold. So it wasn't necessarily that an ultra-right winger came in and he's the only one that could beat Hillary. He won a squeaker in the Electoral College, and she beat him by 3 million popular votes. But they've absorbed that lesson of moderates lose. And so in 2024, there's two narratives. You're either going to have the moderate wing sort of take back control of the party, sort of kick out some of the insurrectionists. If they could kick out some of these people from Congress, I think a moderate will be the nominee in 2024. If they could get rid of the Marjorie Greens, if they could, just anybody, it doesn't matter if it's Ted Cruz and Josh Hawley or literally a member of the House of Representatives, they have to at least get rid of one person because it will send a message. The people being like, well, Democrats, you know, they got to be bipartisan, they got to turn the page. Republicans never do. They never do. The only way to defeat a bully is to punch them in the face. If you try to appease a bully, they get worse. You try to negotiate with them, they get worse. You gotta fucking punch them in the face because most bullies are little bitches that run from a fight. They don't want to fight. But if you fight them, they will stop. 9 times out of 10, they will stop. And so because Trump was not impeached the first time, it emboldened him to be even crazier. And because Marjorie Taylor Greene and Lauren Boebert, who very clearly inspired that mob, helped lead that mob, if they are not out of office, they will get even worse and even crazier. If Ted Cruz and Josh Hawley, well, nothing happened to us. Nothing happened to David Perdue. Nothing happened to Richard Burr. Nothing happened to Kelly Loeffler. Nothing happened to Lindsey Graham. That doesn't inspire them to get any better, ever. But meanwhile, Mitt Romney's over here with an actual set of nuts. He votes to impeach Trump. First time in American history that a senator has voted to impeach a member of their own party. Any politician has voted to impeach a member of their own party. Was there a huge recall Romney effort? There was a small one. Didn't get anywhere. People mostly threw it out. There was no, let's get rid of Romney. And a lot of the Republican elders in the party, they might have even been relieved that Mitt Romney did that. If you have a pair of nuts and you're on the anti-Trump side, Ben Sasse dissed him right before the vote in November, he still won in the landslide. He won Nebraska by a huge margin. Mitt Romney votes to impeach. Nothing really happens to him. If you see that side and they're not being punished, and then you see the other side of the crazies and they're not being punished, it's almost like which one wins out. And I think that if you can punish even one of the crazies, if you can push even one of them out of office, because for some reason, politicians, they don't like losing office. They like being in that job. I'm not sure what it is about that job that is so mesmerizing and so wonderful, but they fight like hell to keep that job. I don't really kind of get it, to be honest with you. If I'm a senator and I'm in there for one term, so be it. I vote the way I want to vote or whatever. If I lose re-election, I lose re-election. I don't understand why re-election is more important than anything else. There's absolutely nothing else you could do. Lindsey Graham, it's like he couldn't have another job. Like if he lost office, he'd be living in a box under a bridge somewhere. I don't know what the hell that is about politicians, that they act like they can't do anything else. Maybe some of them can't. Maybe they're that fucking dumb and that incompetent and that lazy that they could not have another job. Maybe that's part of it. But I look at politicians that lose, they look happier to me. Claire McCaskill, she's on MSNBC. She gets paid $300,000 a year to agree with Eugene Robinson half the time. Rachel Maddow says something, and then Nicole Wallace repeats it Eugene Robinson's like, that was a great point. I agree with what they just said. And then Claire McCaskill comes in, is like, absolutely. I mean, they just kind of echo each other. It's quite an easy job. It pays better than being in the Senate, supposedly. But maybe senators, they get so many kickbacks and they get so many under the table shit. And I think it's the power. I think it's the influence. But you see people in Congress, Matt Gaetz is complaining he sleeps in his office or something like that. All these people in the House, they're like, we can't find housing. Housing's too expensive. We're sleeping in our office. We live in our office. We sleep on a fold-out couch. And I'm like, so why are you fighting like hell to keep a job where it's like you and three grown men in an apartment, like you got roommates at 45 years old or something like that. You're in an apartment. You're cramped together. The wages are not what they are to be a lobbyist afterwards or to be a pundit on MSNBC or Fox News or something. Like, they're not. I just keep wondering, why is it such a big deal to hang on to this job above all else? And I think some of it's got to be a power trip, and some of it's got to be that they're making money hand over fist in some other kind of way. The Senate salary is tertiary to what they're making. Hey, I'm going to be on the board of directors for this rich private school. Hey, I'm going to be an advisor for this hospital. Hey, my law firm's going to consult on this project and get back this money. My construction company is going to make money. There's got to be like 10 times the actual salary for them to be that desperate to hang on to it. People would say, well, you know, you've given no real predictions thus far. What do you think is the future of the Republican Party? And I think that it might be Ben Sasse. I think in 2024, it wouldn't surprise me if he's either the nominee then, or if he wants an easier race, maybe 2028. Because I feel like, I think Ben Sasse could be it. And I'll tell you why I say that. He's generally respected within the Republican Party. The Never Trumpers, they kind of like him. He'll win some of the Never Trumpers back and they'll go to work for him. And some of these people are quite effective. No small thing to have S.E. Cupp and Nicole Wallace and Rick Wilson in your corner. These are formidable people that have a huge media profile. It's no small thing to have them backing you. And because the crazy side of the party is going to be fragmented wildly. You'll have Ted Cruz and Josh Hawley running. You'll have perhaps one of Trump's kids, let's say Don Jr. You'll have people that worked for Trump, Nikki Haley, perhaps Ben Carson, perhaps even Betsy DeVos, horror of horrors, probably Mike Pompeo. So you'll have the Trump ex-cabinet officials and the Trump kids and the ultra-right-wing senators, and they're going to be battling it out on the right-wing side, kind of fragmenting that vote. It leaves the moderate lane wide open for somebody like Ben Sasse. I don't think Mitt Romney could win the nomination again. In fact, I know he couldn't win the nomination again. I doubt John Kasich could win the nomination again. But I think Ben Sasse could win the nomination. He's younger. He's a bit better looking. He's not as tarnished in the eyes of the Republicans as somebody like Mitt Romney or somebody like John Kasich. John Kasich went to the DNC and spoke. Very hard to see somebody going to the DNC and speaking against Joe Biden in 2020 and then in 2024 running against Joe Biden or Kamala Harris. Like, it's very hard to picture those scenarios happening. For Ben Sasse, he dissed Trump. He didn't back him, but it wasn't in such a huge, obvious way of I voted for impeachment or I went to the DNC and spoke. Plus, Iowa is right beside Nebraska. So he's got an immediate in into Iowa in Nebraska. And New Hampshire is the kind of state where I could see him doing pretty good, pretty well in New Hampshire. Nevada, perhaps. He won't win South Carolina. There's no way a guy like that can win South Carolina. But that won't matter if the vote is being so fragmented by all these Trumpers. It could be the opposite of 2016. In 2016, the anti-Trump people were fragmenting a lot of the vote. So Jeb Bush and Chris Christie and Marco Rubio and John Kasich, they all wanted to be the anti-Trump. All those people should have dropped out and endorsed one person. And if one person in the Republican Party had consolidated the base behind, if it was Trump, Ted Cruz, and one anti-Trump, that person might could have won or at least done well enough to push Ted Cruz out and then win eventually or win in a brokered convention, perhaps. But to have it be 16 people are the anti-Trump and Trump's over there kind of hogging all the media attention, all the energy, all of the momentum with his anti-immigration and white nationalist rhetoric. He's able to promote all these ideas that Republicans have been like, yes, why wasn't John McCain more racist all those times? Why didn't he hit Obama on race? So all that momentum just flushed into him and helped him win these states. But at the same time, you know, Trump didn't win Iowa, and there was a few big Midwestern states that he lost. Ben Sasse could win all those. The pro-Trump people are splitting all the vote in 2024 and fragmenting the party that way. So that could happen. I think that would be a good scenario for Republicans. I don't know if they could beat Kamala Harris or Joe Biden in 2024, But to have a more of a moderate candidate like Ben Sasse, they're at least going to be competitive. They will at least have pulled themselves back from the brink of, like, we can't let these crazy people. I heard some people be like, oh, it's going to be Nikki Haley. And if you're Democrats, you're scared of Nikki Haley. And I thought, you people are smoking dope. You're smoking crack. First of all, if you think Nikki Haley is going to be the nominee, you've clearly missed what people were backing Trump for, which is white nationalism, racism, the fact that they don't want to be a minority in their own country. It is impossible to believe that just because Nikki Haley has never criticized Trump, white nationalists and Proud Boys, and you're white-collar racist. I mean, there's a lot of John Birchers in the Republican Party. They're all of a sudden going to be like, oh yeah, Nikki Ramahamalan or whatever. I mean, she changed her name to Nikki Haley. Her last name is a very complex Indian name. It's very hard to see these people who have bashed the shit out of Kamala Harris all of a sudden flipping to Nikki Haley, who's a woman, who's Indian. The media thinks how they think. So because they look at it and they're like, oh, well, Nikki Haley, you know, she's an Indian, she's a woman, she's an ambassador to the United Nations, so she's got strong international credentials. All those things are a negative in Trump world. That's the exact kind of person that they would not vote for. And so the fact that they wouldn't understand that and they wouldn't inherently get it still after watching the Capitol ransacked by a white nationalist mob, after watching people basically promote white nationalist rhetoric for 8 years, after watching Ted Cruz basically pretend that he's white for all this time, to still not understand that is staggering to me, that they could honestly believe. It just shows the echo chamber that the media is in. And it may not be Ben Sasse that is the nominee, but I do think he's who I'd be afraid of, not Nikki Haley. Nobody's going to choose Nikki Haley over Kamala Harris in a general election. But Ben Sasse, if Joe Biden doesn't run for a second term and many people don't believe that he will and Kamala Harris is the nominee, then you're almost stupid if you don't go with a white male, only because you know you're going to get 50 million votes just based off that fact alone, regardless of who you put up. I'm not shaking in my boots over Mike Pence or Nikki Haley or anybody that I know will not be embraced by Trump world. And with someone like Ben Sasse, you know, maybe he won't be. Maybe it'll be another moderate that loses to Harris, which would be fantastic for us as Democrats. It's a good question of where does the Republican Party go from here. And I'm sure we'll see this develop more in the next 20 episodes. Thanks for listening, everybody. I hope that you're staying safe, COVID-free, and I look forward to the next episode.